Welcome to the Temple and Sanctuary of the Grail. The Temple of the Holy Grail is not a religion or a church. It's an inexpensive and quite accessible initiatic and spiritual training school for those with proper interior preparation and motivation. Now, what do I mean by proper? I mean those who are maturationally and emotionally ready to undertake private, advanced, esoteric probation and occult initiatic training in order to anonymously serve humanity and planetary evolution. Now, it does not necessarily mean that one has to be active in a profession like teaching or healing or any of the other kinds of things that we think of as serving humanity. One could be involved in any kind of work, and it can be even military or business or whatever it might be. But this kind of effort that you make, the way you focalize your energy in life, can be transformed and made to serve in a positive way using techniques that are initiatic and priestly and in ways that are not necessarily public or obvious to other people. So that's why we want people who have a lot of interior development, if possible, people who have sympathy, empathy, who understand how to deal with other people, people that have some sense and some human intelligence and so on, or are serving in fields devoted to the spiritual unfoldment of humanity and the redemption or salvation or cleansing of the planet and the environment. Now, once you've read the introduction entitled Initiation into the Grail Mysteries and you have a clear overview of the order of the Grail work, you may apply for WESOC initiation and admission to First Order Empowerments. Now, what are these First Order Empowerments? Well, they are empowerments that are empowered through lineage, through the egregore of the temple, and they are also self-empowerments. They are worked by you yourself. They can be done at your own pace over many years. Some people begin and they do one or two empowerments and come back two or three years later and want to continue, or they can be completed in as little as 13 months. Those who wish to complete the final two First Order empowerments, however, must also enroll in the home temple priesthood training. And this can be done inexpensively as part of a group or can be done individually. Ideally, both Temple of the Holy Grail, which we abbreviate as THG, and the home temple training would be done concurrently. Now, completion of all First Order empowerments opens the portal to the great Second Order Christ Melchizedek Tantra, which is a potent new hermetic Kabbalistic adaptation and high-tech revision of Kala Chakra generation and completion stages for Westerners, and it leads to the highest forms of human spiritual development, which may be achieved by certain people even within one lifetime. Now, what is the Holy Grail? It is the sacred Graal, or graduated path of initiation and spiritual attainment. It's not just a cup or a mythical chalice or something that inspires the imagination with Arthurian legend and so on. It's much more ancient than that, and it's rooted in the highest mysteries of the Western mystery tradition. It is that deep initiatic training that has always existed in many cultures, both Eastern and Western. And in the ancient Celtic tradition, this path of shamanic and priestly training was known as the Graal, which literally means gradual, step by step. It served in much the same way as the Tibetan Lam Rim, or path of advancement, step by step, degree upon degree. For the Grail is a sacred path of spiritual initiation and advancement. Now, what we know as the Holy Grail, or the Holy Sacred Graal traditions of Europe, had this kind of a background. They developed as hermetic, Kabbalistic, and Pythagorean synthesis of Indian, Buddhist, Brahmin, Egyptian, Chaldean, Zoroastrian, Chinese, Taoist, internal and alchemical arts preserved from the attempts of Orthodox Christianity and Byzantine Christianity to eradicate all traces of so-called paganism, preserved in the city of Akhmim on the Nile River, where they were discovered by the Islamic incursions and taken happily and gladly into Islamic tradition, influencing Sufi tradition, Islamic alchemy, etc., and the preservation of the Greek philosophers that were later brought to the West again through Islam during the Renaissance. And these traditions also moved into Europe with the synthesis of Celtic spirituality in the Gnostic Christianity that was brought to Europe by Arius and his disciples and his various strong, independent, individual Christian adepts who were the first to move into the areas of Gaul and Britain and so on. And these were not the later Catholic missionaries who came in a much later wave and tried to undo what these people had done. And they were accepted by the masters of the Celtic tradition and the Druidic traditions, and a great synthesis was brought about at that time. And this resulted in a sacred training for priesthood that was supported under the Merovingian rule. Now, the Merovingians were the dynasty that retained power by claiming to be direct blood descendants of Jesus the Christ, which they were not. But during the era of Charlemagne in the 9th and 10th centuries, the Carolingian dynasty prevailed and crushed the Merovingian traditions and replaced the Gnostic Celtic Christianity with Roman Catholic Orthodoxy and substituted its own form of magical holy blood in the form of the Catholic Eucharist or Mass. And the sacred Graal, which constituted the oral inner sanctum of Merovingian priesthood training, and therefore the Celtic version or the Druidic version of what was originally a Hermetic and Kabbalistic and Pythagorean and Taoist and so on synthesis that had been made much earlier, this lost its political support, and from this point onward was transmitted only secretly and at great risk. It became part of the great underground stream of European esoteric tradition, out of which all the European esoteric orders were developed, Rosicrucianism, esoteric Freemasonry, etc. And the development of the European royal houses and the Christian nobility and the chivalric orders and the search for sacred relics of Christianity in the Muslim-controlled Holy Land produced the Holy Grail quest legends and romances. These are not to be confused, however, with the sacred Graal itself, which became part of this underground stream that nourished the many manifestations of church-suppressed European spirituality, Gnosticism, Catharism, Templarism, indigenous Protestant mysticism, Hermetic and alchemical and Kabbalistic schools, Rosicrucianism, Freemasonry, and the later initiatic schools of the Illuminist period, such as the Egyptian rites of Freemasonry and the Pythagorean and Martinist schools. And many of these initiatic mystery schools were abbreviated, allegorized, and memorialized in the higher degrees of Freemasonry, like the Scottish Rite, the York Rite, and the suppressed theurgical degrees of Memphis Mizraim and the lost rituals of Martinez de Pasquale's Eloquoan training. A synthesis of what remained of the sacred Graal was made by John Yarker, Grand Master of the London Lodge and secret initiator of Madame Blavatsky, in his Pan-Sophic Rites, as well as by orders like the Germanic Asiatic Brotherhood of the Golden and Rosy Cross, the Hermetic Brotherhood of Luxor, Zion's Hermetic Brotherhood of Light, Westcott and Mathers in the Golden Dawn School, and others who brought together the OTO and other schools. These were attempts to bring together both Eastern and Western pathways of the sacred Graal. And many of these still operate today using the same rituals and training that characterize the classic medieval European schools. But now, in the last quarter of the 20th century, a new powerful form of the sacred Graal, or Holy Grail, has emerged. Although it holds charters and authorities from all 22 European initiatic orders of the Pan-Sufic Rites, its teachings and techniques and practices come out of the future, not out of the past. They are practical applications of what we might call high-tech empowerments designed to potentiate the psychic and spiritual unfoldment of both contemporary and future well-developed souls in divine service. The temple operates not under a human guru or master, but under the guidance of Mar Yeshua, the living Master Jesus, who overcame human evil and death and attained the Kabbalistic ideal known as the Hima, which the Christians call resurrection, and who achieved what is known in Christian language as Christhood, and who oversees our path to this same transcendent goal, a path that ascends the mountain of divine self, not in a life of isolation and retreat, but one of interaction, contribution, and human service. The egregor of the temple is composed of countless beings of spiritual hierarchy working in divine service and chelaship under the avatar of perfected humanity, or the Christ. The practices and attunements and empowerments that we've been given, when used in the context of a life of active service in society, are far more effective than the extensive, time-consuming practices and rituals of medieval or monastic religions, tantras and yogas, Eastern or Western. Now, science tells us of the development of life from primordial elements through increasingly complex forms leading to human-like creatures and the evolutions and ascent of humanity. But the myths and creation stories of many religions and cultures, including the secret doctrine, tell us of the descent and fall of mankind from an initial perfection into a state of loss and separation from divine reality. This fall of man is an archetypal sin developing from an archetypal flaw. For example, the Mahavastu of early Buddhism tells us that originally all beings were self-luminous spheres of mind that moved freely anywhere and lived in permanent bliss. Then one of them noticed the sweet, milky sea of existence and tasted it. Then others joined him, and thus began the fall into incarnation. The sin was egoism and pleasure-seeking, or the hermetic story that we can find in the Poimandres, which tells us that archetypal humanity, which is called the Son of God in Platonistic tradition, not yet divided into two sexes, bent down through the spheres of the planets and saw its reflection in the waters of Earth, and falling in love with its own reflection like Narcissus, archetypal humanity merged with physis, or incarnate nature, and was trapped into the cyclic rounds of sexual generations and reincarnation, divided into two sexes, etc. And the sin here was love of the lower realities. But the Graal teachings tell us that there was no fall of mankind or of humanity. Humanity is still one great being, and each of us is a microcosm of that macrocosm. The fall of mankind is an illusion. Perfection lies deep within our hearts. It is only in the lower personal consciousness that humanity is fractured and separated from its divine unity and reality. And we prove that to ourselves by evoking and developing the microcosmic divine powers that lie dormant within our own monadic heart centers. Divine reality is good and absolute. Evil is relative. It has no absolute reality. It is part of what we call the reflected or inverted worlds. In the work of the Grail, we develop a practical basis for absolute power over evil forces within and without ourselves. In the first empowerment, which is known as exorcism, or power over dark forces, and which must be done immediately after Wisak initiation to protect a new initiate from the consequences of the psychic attack that inevitably pursues and follows every initiate. First and foremost, we must prove ourselves as warrior knights and Amazons of light, and we are given the psychic armor and spiritual weapons that ultimately render us invincible. That doesn't mean we won't suffer. Like the snake charmer, we'll be bitten many times, but eventually we become powerful, immune handlers of even the most poisonous reptiles, so to speak. As the Master said, I saw Satan fall like lightning from heaven. But behold, I give you power to tread on serpents and scorpions and all the might of the enemy, and nothing shall by any means harm you. And where is the most powerful enemy to be found? Within ourselves. When we learn to still the inner storms and waves, we find that we have power over the storms and waves of life, even the elemental storms of the physical atmosphere. We find that when we heal our interiors, we will be able to evoke healing in others. When we are able to hear the sacred voice of the silence, we will be able to help others hear their own sacred voice. This was always the path of shamanism, of shamanic training. And shamanism underlies all spiritual training and all spiritual traditions among human beings. The spontaneous shaman and shamanic work is that of the spiritually sensitive and talented individual who is able to connect the visible world with the subtle worlds, the worlds of the ancestors, the worlds of the invisible spirits that are always around us, the great sea of psychic life in which we live and move and have our being. And this training that we do goes back to a very shamanic kind of orientation. But it is priestly training, and that is why it's so important to combine this with the whole course that we provide in training for apostolic priesthood. Because it is theurgical. It is the working of powerful shamanic forces in a highly organized way under the mastership of the greatest master who ever walked the earth, Mar Yeshua, the Master Jesus. So when you combine THG first order empowerments with home temple training for valid, legal, apostolic ordination, and the apostolic succession is the oldest continuous and recorded lineage, spiritual lineage, that we have in the world. It's over 2,000 years old. When you do this, you will be able to develop all aspects of what we call the Grail priesthood. You'll find yourself assuming a natural, ontological position of spiritual leadership as a teacher, a mentor, a counselor, a healer for other people who will find themselves drawn to you. This is not a professional ministry. We're not preparing people for a profession. It's a private, sacred reality. The home temple priesthood training is not to prepare people to make money doing priestcraft. It's to prepare people to become empowered with the sacred reality that exists around them, to know how to work with it, and to use it in service. Very often, that service is anonymous. Very often, it's invisible. It's a private, sacred reality, which is a kind of invisible radiance to which other souls who are ready for this level of spiritual work are attracted and led by their own interior guidance. And the work of the Grail Temple is therefore a means by which spiritual colleagues find each other and are brought together by spirit for sacred group work. And it's a means by which even people that might be soulmates find each other. That was certainly the case for me and my wife, the Grail Mother. By the same token, the temple itself interacts collegially with other great spiritual centers and mystery schools and highly evolved people and adepts who are true adepts, not just people with titles or egos who have disciples or people who charge huge amounts of money for training, which our school does not do. Membership in the Temple of the Holy Grail does not exclude membership in any other form of spiritual school. It's meant as an enhancement. It's meant to as a special kind of private training, just as you would take a course at a university, but it's far more powerful than that. It must also be stressed that membership in THG does not imply adherence to any form of Christian religion or dogma. The home temple is a religious organization. It is perhaps what Christianity should have been, but is not, and would consider itself not to be. So THG is not specifically denominational. It is spiritual, not religious. We serve under the guidance and the teachings of Mar Yeshua, whom the Christians call the Messiah and the Christ, but we know as the great spiritual master, Jesus. The Master Jesus was an adept of the highest order. His training came strictly through Judaism. He didn't go to India, as legends would have it. I mean, the legends would have Jesus everywhere. The Mormons would have him in America. They'd have him in India. They have him in England and France. That's not true. The Master Jesus was a Jew, a very highly talented prophet, and a spiritual Kabbalist. He was trained through many means, one of which was that of his father, Joseph, who was his true physical father, who was not a carpenter, as we've been led to believe. He was a stonemason. There were no trees to do carpentry on in the areas where they lived. And Jesus was trained in stonemasonry. And he was initiated into that guild. And in the family of Joseph, the skill of stonemasonry, which was not a Jewish skill. The Jews had no tradition of masonry until they had gone and become captives in Babylon. And there, through warm relations with their Chaldean captors, and they were finally brought back to rebuild the temple under Zerubbabel. And Zerubbabel is the ancestor of Joseph. He was the first master mason in Judaism. And Jesus was of that line. And Jesus undoubtedly trained in the spiritual degrees of that guild. And it was there that he developed his characteristic concern for internal purity, the ethics, the singleness of mind and the singleness of heart, the being the same person on the inside as on the outside, all the ethical propositions, because the whole work of stonemasonry was ethically interpreted by this allegory, just as it is in modern Freemasonry. But Jesus himself trained also with other people, with prophets who lived in Galilee and in the desert, and especially with John the Baptist, the greatest of all the prophets, who taught him the work of the chariot and all the great work that Jesus manifested. And finally, at the end of his life, Mar Yeshua completed the greatest work of the chariot, which was the Kima. Jesus became what in modern terminology would be known as an ascended master. He joined those with whom he was already in communion, Moses and Elijah, but perhaps is the greatest of them. And this understanding of the Master Jesus is not Christian. Christians came to regard Jesus as a God that had descended from heaven rather than as a human being who had developed and become more than human. And this teaching, which was the teaching of Arius, was suppressed by the Orthodox churches as Jesus was slowly transformed into kind of a Greek god and understood in that kind of way as a mythological character rather than a real flesh and blood master, which is what he was. And Mar Yeshua, the Master Jesus, is the head of our order, and we do an empowerment which brings us very close into the circle of discipleship around Mar Yeshua for the interior instruction that that offers us through dreams and through the great power line of the apostolic succession, which is a way of connecting ourselves closely and taking darshan, so to speak, of that very high and advanced understanding and knowledge. Take very seriously the exercise and work that is done with the face of the Master Jesus. This face, which is the negative image from the Shroud of Turin, as it's called, is not only one of the greatest scientific mysteries of modern times, but is one of the most powerful spiritual talismans that you can use. Those who are disciples of a great teacher in India will memorize the features of the face of that teacher. And even though that teacher might be far away in the mountains in a cave, the disciple will connect psychically and spiritually with that teacher through a process of meditation on the face of the master. And that process will bring that chela, or that disciple, close within the aura of that teacher and bring that teacher within the aura of that disciple. We are all under guidance. We are under guidance of our own higher nature, and we are under guidance of those far more advanced and ascended beings that work with humanity. The Master Jesus, Mar Yeshua, is the most advanced of these. He is, so to speak, our guru. And through great good fortune, we are shown the actual historical face of the Master Jesus on the shroud image, the Shroud of Turin. You ought to do some very serious studies of the shroud and the Sudarian. We include information about that and studies on that in the home temple training. But when you truly understand the power of this image and the image of that face and how to use that, and to combine that with the empowerment you have as you are ordained in the succession of the Mebazrim, the apostles of the Master Jesus, you will become linked to human spiritual hierarchy in a way that you cannot be linked through any other work or any other tradition. And this is one very powerful, important thing about this synthesis that we're offering of the priesthood training and the initiatic training of the Temple of the Holy Grail. This is something that we do not accept all people who apply. There are many, many people we do not accept for this program. And we're not interested in people who are trying to achieve power. We're not interested in immature people. We're not interested in people who are just curious, or people who are just doing this because a person close to them wants them to do it. This is a very special kind of training. It does not consume your life. It does not require you to be no longer a member of something else, or to forget about what your religion is, or leave your religion or join some new religion or something like that. It is a course of training, just like the Course in Miracles, for example, but a very powerful one. And you do it yourself. It's a do-it-yourself project. It's a distance learning project. and it's something that you work on through your own motivation and your own talent once you are accepted for initiation. So this is a basic overview of what the Temple of the Holy Grail is all about. On the succeeding tapes, you will hear material from lectures that I gave back in the very early 90s to some of the first initiates of THG, in fact, the first probationers of THG. And this will give you some idea of the scope of what we do. The quality of these recordings is not very high in some cases, but I think you'll be able to make sense of them. There are some specific techniques that you need to learn and you need to develop before you can actually successfully do the initiatic vigil, the initiation. And one of them is to begin to get a handle on the use of harmonic intoning. This is not nose whistling like you hear used in music. This is a way of pronouncing words powerfully and magically, kabbalistically. And the other thing you need to develop is very important, is what we call the Iliaster meditation or temple meditation, the holy white light meditation. There are many forms of meditation. No other form substitutes for this, because this becomes the substance out of which you will be able to perform and do the empowerments and even more advanced work when you work theurgically in the Grail priesthood. From the Home Temple website at www.hometemple.org, going to the THG section, you will be able to order other materials as you prepare for WESAC initiation once accepted.